Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Alice Bryant, Ashley Thompson, Katie Weaver, and a public service announcement from Jonathan Evans. But first, this report. The coronavirus crisis has taken much of the university experience away from students in the class of 2020. It has ended their study early, disconnected friendships, and taken away the last memories of their college days. It may harm their career possibilities as the world enters an economic downturn. It has even robbed them of the traditional graduation ceremonies as social distancing limits large gatherings. But while graduates, friends, and family may not be able to cheer as they walk across a stage to receive their diploma, many schools have found ways to honor students online. In the United States and elsewhere, an important part of graduation ceremonies is a message from well-known or respected artists, activists, and politicians. These people usually give a speech offering advice to the graduates for their next steps in life. This year was no different, except for the fact that these speakers were not standing in front of crowds of thousands. They made these speeches from home or shared pre-recorded videos online. And students and their loved ones watched on their computers or smartphones, also at home. On May 4th, American actor Tom Hanks, a COVID-19 survivor, surprised graduates of Wright State University's Department of Theater, Dance, and Motion Pictures. He made an appearance right before the start of the Dayton, Ohio school's online graduation ceremony. "You are the chosen ones," Hanks told the students. "You started in the olden times, in a world back before the great pandemic of 2020. You will talk of those earlier years in your lives in just that way." Former U.S. President Barack Obama also gave a speech online to graduates of American Historically Black Colleges and Universities, or HBCUs, on May 16th. Obama did not just offer words of advice, he also criticized how current world leaders are dealing with the crisis. "You're going to have to grow up faster than some generations," Obama said. "More than anything, this pandemic has fully, finally, torn back the curtain on the idea that so many of the folks in charge know what they are doing. A lot of them aren't even pretending to be in charge. If the world's going to get better, it's going to be up to you." Social media companies Facebook and Instagram held their own online event called #graduation2020. It included appearances from singer Selena Gomez, comedian Awkwafina, actor Matthew McConaughey, and many others. "It's more than a diploma. It's more than graduation. It's knowing that you took it, that you went through those hard nights studying, said rapper Cardi B. Now you're about to start your lives. You're about to show what you worked for. High school graduates did not go unnoticed as well. Earlier this month, American broadcaster NBC presented an event called Graduate Together. America honors the high school class of 2020. It included appearances by basketball player LeBron James and education activist Malala Yousafzai. I'm also missing my graduation ceremony from Oxford University this year, Malala said. For most of us, this is temporary. We'll continue our education and follow our dreams. But many girls, especially in developing countries, will be forced into early marriages or low-paying jobs to support their families. So I ask you to remember them today as you go out and change the world. Don't leave them behind. Still, some colleges and universities have made different plans for graduation. Arizona State University turned to robots for the traditional ceremonies at the Thunderbird School of Global Management. Graduates took turns moving a robot across the stage to receive their diploma as friends and family watched online. At Rice University in Houston, Texas, officials are holding an online event with no guest speaker. Others are avoiding online events entirely. And graduates at the University of California, Berkeley, say they want their own in-person celebration at a later date. However, the United States Military Academy Class of 2020 has no choice. Last month, President Donald Trump said he would want to give the graduation speech in person. School officials have since announced that the graduates will return for the ceremony in West Point, New York, on June 13th. I'm Pete Musto.
And now, words and their stories from VOA Learning English. Are you feeling overworked? Are you so concerned with moving up in your career that you feel stressed and unhappy? If so, maybe it is time for you to stop and smell the roses. People who need to stop and smell the roses should stop working so hard. They need to slow down and take time to appreciate the many things that life has to offer. Often, this means enjoying the wonders of nature, looking at stars in the night sky, feeling the wind blowing your hair, smelling flowers growing near a busy street. But the flowers do not have to be roses. While this expression relates to roses, it can be anything rather small or even commonplace. These things may seem small, but they can give us great joy. The thing that you stop to watch could be an old married couple holding hands, a child jumping in a puddle, or a musician performing by your bus stop. These are the things, simple but beautiful things, that we often walk by in a hurry to get to our next appointment. Very ambitious, highly driven people often need to stop and smell the roses. We sometimes call this kind of person type A. Such people often do not know when to sit back and stop working. So they may have a hard time slowing down and doing something as simple as smelling flowers. But you know, maybe for a type A person, the best thing in the world might be working. In that case, stopping to smell the roses may give them no joy at all. Maybe smelling flowers gives them an allergic reaction. Maybe the person has many mouths to feed at home and does not have time to stop and smell the roses. People and their situations are complex. Now we turn to another rose expression. Every rose has its thorns. Roses come in many colors, and many are beautiful. Also, some of the flowers give off a wonderful smell. No one can argue with that. But most roses have something that is not very nice. Thorns. Thorns stick out from the stem of the plant. They can cut into the skin and make you bleed. They hurt. Every rose has its thorns means that everything usually has a bad side, even beautiful things. This expression can also mean that a thorn does not take away from a rose's beauty. Are the thorns unpleasant when they cut us? Well, yes. But is the rose still beautiful and worthwhile to have? Again, yes. We need to respect the beauty of roses and the thing that can hurt us, the thorn. Thorns help protect the plant from plant-eating animals, so they serve a purpose. Maybe flowers are as complex as we are. Which expression best describes your feelings right now? To stop and smell the roses, or every rose has its thorns? And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. Join us again next week as we explore more expressions in American English. Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
To help protect yourself against the new coronavirus, wash your hands for 20 seconds with soap and water before you eat, after using the toilet, and after touching anything many other people touch, like a seat on a public bus. If you cannot wash your hands with soap and water, use an alcohol-based hand sanitizer that contains at least 60% alcohol. Taking these steps can help prevent not only the new coronavirus disease, but also colds, flu, and other viruses. For more information, visit the following websites: the World Health Organization at www.who.int or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention at www.cdc.gov.
Stay-at-home orders during the coronavirus crisis have forced many bars and nightclubs in the United States to close temporarily. A century ago, bars across the country were also forcibly closed when the Volstead Act became law. The measure made it a crime for Americans to manufacture, sell, or transport alcohol. The period when the Volstead Act was the law of the land is known today as Prohibition. The push to ban alcohol in the U.S. began in the 1850s. Christian women claimed alcohol was turning men into alcoholics. Drinking leads to violence and poverty and destroys families, they said. So began the social movements against alcohol and women raiding bars to destroy bottles of whiskey. Their actions grew from being a problem for bar workers into a real political movement. David Ockrent wrote the book Last Call: The Rise and Fall of Prohibition. He told VOA News that brewers and distillers of alcoholic products campaigned hard to defeat anti-alcoholic politicians. Such politicians were popularly known as dries. The brewers and distillers fought back hard, even to the point of interfering with elections. Drinking did decrease in the United States in the first years of Prohibition, but many Americans quickly began ignoring the law. Businesses known as speakeasies began to open by the hundreds in large cities. Speakeasies were stores or clubs that secretly sold alcohol. Bathtubs were used for purposes other than washing up. Some people used them to make alcohol. Wearing large overcoats and high boots became popular because they could easily hide bottles of alcohol. This gave birth to the term bootlegger. People also started using walking sticks because the insides of the sticks could be filled with whiskey. Anyone caught taking a drink quickly claimed the liquid was for medicinal purposes. Many of the people who owned speakeasies and bought and sold whiskey were deeply involved in organized crime. Al Capone, Bugs Moran, and Dutch Schultz became household names and extremely rich. There were far more criminals involved in bootlegging than federal officers who tried to enforce the law. Ockrent said it was not long before Prohibition was not taken seriously. Anybody could get a drink any time of the day, he said. You could walk in at 10 in the morning to get a drink. A 15-year-old could buy a drink. There was no regulatory environment. But H.L. Mencken said getting a drink in the city of Baltimore was very difficult unless you knew a judge or a cop, noted Ockrent. Mencken was an American journalist and cultural critic from that period. And foreign visitors to the United States thought of Prohibition as unreasonable. Winston Churchill, and you can imagine what he thought of Prohibition, came to the U.S. and toured the West in the mid to late 1920s, said Ockrent. When Churchill arrived in Washington State, the first person who gave him alcohol was a customs official, he noted. It was the Great Depression that would kill Prohibition. The U.S. government was struggling, and people suggested taxing alcohol as a way for it to get money. When President Herbert Hoover attended a game at baseball's 1931 World Series, the crowd responded with loud boos, with many shouting, "We want beer." After Franklin Roosevelt defeated Hoover in the 1932 presidential election, it did not take long for Prohibition to end. The 21st Amendment ended the alcohol ban, and drinking became legal again in December 1933. Today's legislation on alcohol sales and drinking comes from Prohibition. In addition to taxes, it includes age limits and required closing hours for bars. It also blocks Americans from opening a bar near a religious center or school. Ockrent noted how strange it is that it is harder to get a drink these days when it is legal than it was in the 1920s when it was illegal. I'm Alice Bryant.
On our national parks journey, we head to southern Florida. Here, you will find blue-green seas, marine wildlife, and islands that hold thousands of years of human history. Welcome to Biscayne National Park. Biscayne is not very far from the lights, noise, and excitement of downtown Miami. But it has a very different atmosphere from the big city. Biscayne National Park was established as a national monument in 1968. It became a national park in 1980. That year, its size also increased. The park now covers more than 70,000 hectares. It includes the northern part of the world-famous Florida Keys. Keys are low-lying islands or reefs.
If you enjoy water, Biscayne is the park for you. 95% of the park is water. Many kinds of animals live within the park. Some of them are threatened or endangered. You will find the huge, gentle West Indian manatee, the less gentle American crocodile, several kinds of sea turtles, and more than 500 species of fish. Four ecosystems come together here, which is what makes the park so diverse. The blending ecosystems create what is called edge communities. These edge communities support a huge array of wildlife. The underwater diversity is what attracts most people to Biscayne National Park. Many visitors come here to snorkel or scuba dive in Biscayne's clear and warm waters.
Human history at Biscayne begins more than 10,000 years ago. Scientists say evidence of the area's earliest people is mostly underwater now, as water levels have risen over time. Within the last 3,000 years, people began to settle in the area. Scientists continue to learn about these people by examining the big hills of shells they left behind. The shells contain other waste, too, including early tools and housewares. As the population grew, it divided into separate cultures. The groups began making pottery and created trade networks. These Native Americans are called the Tequesta. The Tequesta depended on the rich food source of the sea to survive. They were not centered on farming, which requires huge amounts of time. So the Tequesta had more time than other natives for art and religion. Very complex social structures developed as a result. European explorers began arriving in the area in the early 1500s. They brought with them diseases like smallpox and measles. Over time, these diseases killed huge numbers of Florida's natives. Early explorers arrived in the area on ships. The reefs and rough waters made it difficult for ship captains. Biscayne's waters contain more than 50 shipwrecks. Scuba divers today can explore 6 of them.
Among them is the Earl King, which sank in 1891. It was built in 1865. Earl King was mostly used to transport goods, but it also carried wealthy passengers. In its first few years of service, it was used for trading between China and Australia. The ship hit Long Reef as it sailed to New Orleans from England in 1891. Its machinery and other parts were saved, but Earl King itself sank to the sea floor. Another shipwreck that scuba divers can explore is the Lugano. The British steamship sank in 1913. At the time of its sinking, it was the largest ship ever to wreck in the Florida Keys. It was traveling to Havana, Cuba, carrying goods and more than 100 passengers. Most of them were Spaniards immigrating to Cuba. High winds and heavy seas sent the ship far off course. A collision with Long Reef damaged the ship. Much of the cargo and all of the passengers were safely removed. The captain and crew remained aboard. Many people tried to remove the water from Lugano and repair it, but after several weeks, they abandoned their efforts. Today, the Lugano remains on Long Reef, almost 8 meters below water.
Many visitors to Biscayne National Park choose to explore underwater. Guides lead snorkeling and scuba diving trips. These give visitors the chance to get up close to the park's underwater wildlife as well as its shipwrecks. Visitors can also explore the park on a boat. Canoeing and kayaking are great ways to enjoy Biscayne's mangrove forests. Mangroves are little trees that grow in coastal waters. Many people take a kayak or canoe around the islands and lagoons. At Elliott Key, visitors can set up camp and sleep in the wild. At Boca Chica Key, visitors can explore a lighthouse. The lighthouse has become a symbol of Biscayne National Park. It was built in the 1930s by Mark Honeywell, one of the island's former owners. The deck at the top of the 20-meter-tall lighthouse provides beautiful views of the ocean and the nearby islands. The top of the lighthouse also offers views of Miami Beach's famous skyline. But visitors to Biscayne National Park probably are not there to see skyscrapers and city lights. The beauty in Biscayne is quiet waters, rustling mangroves, and, if you're lucky, a visit with a manatee. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.